Welcome to the Tour Life Podcast from Well Better Best. I'm Janine, your host, integrative nutrition health coach and personal trainer. In the past 10 years, I've had the privilege of meeting some of the most interesting and hardworking professionals in the music industry. Whether you are a fan of live music or someone who actually puts on the shows, you'll find some great stories, advice, and encouragement to live a happier, healthier life doing what you love. Today's guest is a tour accountant who has worked on productions such as Warped Tour and began her career in the industry at Jam Productions in Chicago. She is an adjunct professor at Columbia College Chicago and the executive director of Showmakers, which was developed to share industry content, facilitate conversations, provide thought leadership, and showcase organizations that are dedicated to the live events community. In this episode, we discuss finding a career path in the music industry, how to show up for your kids as they find their way in life, being pregnant on tour, understanding your values and priorities in order to establish and enforce personal boundaries, the value of decluttering, as well as the effects of motherhood on Jen's interpersonal communication style. You can find her on Instagram at jkellogg11. Here is my conversation with Jen Kellogg. Jen, thank you so much for joining me on the Tour Life Podcast. I've been wanting to have you on for a while, so I'm excited to get you talking and pick your brain.
Well, thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Could you start by telling me a little bit about your story? Because I know I'm familiar with some of the things that you do and that you've done, because we've done a couple things together in the past, but I don't really know like the gist of it. Like, if you could give me a little bit of a story about how you got from music just being like a little spark in your eye to now, you know, helping other people and even teaching at Columbia and everything, that would be amazing.
Sure. So, well, I mean, I can tell that version of the story that takes 3 hours or the 30 seconds. So I'm going to hit somewhere in the shorter version. I think that when I was starting out in the industry in the late 90s, I know I age myself by saying this, but the internet wasn't a thing. And really, it was just getting started. So, you know, nowadays, there's such an opportunity to research what kind of careers exist and what different lifestyles and rhythms of life that exist. But, you know, in the time I was growing up, that wasn't, you saw what your parents did and what your friends' parents did. And that was kind of the exposure that I had. It was when I was in college that I saw the ad for the Student Commission on Programming and Entertainment, was the concert committee at the University of Iowa. And I remember seeing that going, like having this light bulb moment of, well, of course they need finance people to put on concerts and everything else behind the scenes. But it hadn't really occurred to me before that, because you just don't see it. And I know that that's the case still for a lot of people. Being a roadie, when we pull into a truck stop, a lot of times somebody in the truck stop will be like, ooh, who's on that bus? And it'll be like, just the tour accountant and the production manager and the stage managers and nobody famous. So, you know, I think that getting that kind of peek behind the curtain into what kind of jobs existed was really the first connection between, I really love going to concerts. I love the energy of a live event. But then being able to, I was a finance major and I'm a numbers person, being able to connect that with a career was pretty exciting and something I didn't even know existed until I was down the road in my education.
Yeah, that's really interesting. So it sounds like you were first into like math and finance, like that was what you liked, but then you also found out that there was a really interesting industry that you could apply it to.
Yes. And a lot of finance in particular, you hear about job titles being kind of, you're aiming for a particular job title, or what are you going to do when you graduate? Everybody's kind of focused on job titles. And I think one of the things that kind of doesn't get talked about as much as, what are you doing every minute of the day that you're working on that job? And that those daily tasks and those minute by minute, how are you spending your time, has a much bigger impact on whether or not you like a career or like a job. That has more to do with it, I think, than the job title. So a lot of getting into the concert industry, in one way, you think you want to do one thing, but once you start doing it in anything in life, you learn, oh, I like this part of it. I don't like that part of it. Oh, I like working more independently, or I like working as a part of a team. I like sitting at a computer all day, or I really want to be up on my feet moving around. All of those bits and pieces, you kind of don't know until you get doing them. And I don't know that I had a big change for me personally, but I think that was getting into some of the jobs in the concert industry, discovering that those qualities of the job were going to have a bigger impact on how I felt about doing that job than what the job title was. I don't know that answers that. I don't even remember what your question was now.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's your story, but that's it's so awesome that you're touching on that, because choosing a career, I think when we're teenagers, it just seems like this really overwhelming thing. And it's like you have to have everything figured out when you don't have enough information to make that decision.
Yeah, I don't know why we're telling kids to do that. Like that's bonkers to me. Why are you supposed to know what you want to do for the rest of your life when you're 18? I'm 44. I don't know what I want to do for the rest of my life. Why would I expect a college kid to have any idea? They haven't had time to try stuff out. Yeah, I think that we always hear people asking kids, and I did too, ask kids, like, what do you want to be when you grow up? And then I heard a phrase, the better question to ask is, what kind of person do you want to be when you grow up? Because that leads to more of, what are the qualities that you want to develop in yourself that not only are tied to your career, but tied to the other things that you do in life. And I think that as a society, we expect kids to know what they want to be when they grow up and work towards that, and then graduate from college and get settled into a job and be doing that job. And a lot of times, especially those beginning jobs, aren't really what you want to be doing. They're entry level, they're foot in the door, they're getting coffee for people and making copies and watering plants, right? Sometimes, right? And so that can be very discouraging. But if instead we ask, what kind of person do you want to be, then we can look at what's the whole well-roundedness of our life. And it's not just career. It's who do I want to be in my community? Who do I want to be in my family? And, who do I want to be in my career? It doesn't put the focus solely on career. And we can start looking at things like I do a lot of work in my community just that's events related. So with my kids' school PTO, I put on the school carnival because I'm an event planner type person. And that's the kind of person I want to be, is take the skills that I have and where can I fit that in a community. And it doesn't matter that I'm not getting paid. That's a volunteer thing. I love that I can give my time for that. But it certainly adds to who am I as a person? What kind of person do I want to be? I think it's crazy. We expect kids to know what they want to do so early.
Oh my gosh. I know. I taught high school for, I guess I finished out 3 years. But I feel like the main contribution that I gave was to help kids understand that it's okay to not have all the answers.
Yeah. It really is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was definitely, I would have a lot of kids who, if you just think of it, like especially in the United States, like school is, everybody has to pretty much do the same thing. You're providing all of the kids with pretty much the same experience. There's a little bit of variety depending on their extracurriculars, but for the most part, it's the same experience. So how can we really get them to find themselves when you're putting them in the same box?
Mm-hmm. And it becomes such a competition amongst kids to get into the right college. Even to get into the right preschool, right? And then the right other schools in some cases. We're putting kids in competition that with this far off end goal of you have to do these things in order to be a successful, happy adult. And, I think that now as an adult, I think I see lots of people who went through that as children and have found themselves to not necessarily have become a happy adult as a result, right? I think there's a lot of parents, like my husband and I, that, you know, don't see one singular path to healthy, happy, self-sufficient adulthood for our kids, right? They're going to take the lead on what they're interested in and how they want to get there. And we're not going to put them on one single linear path that we think is going to be the only way to get to whatever they might deem success for themselves. You know, and I think that having that open-mindedness and letting them explore their interests and also having had a career that's a little bit non-traditional, I'm certainly more go with the flow than maybe some parents that have not had untraditional, non-traditional careers. But I think that my career has helped informed me in a parenting sense that they're going to figure it out. If I give them the right foundational building blocks and a love of learning, they're going to figure it out. And they don't have to have it figured out when they're 18 or 22, right? It's a, you know, they're going to have an idea of what they want to do, and they're going to be self-sufficient and self-reliant and have, you know, some work ethic and grit to them. Hopefully, fingers crossed, this, because I think that those are the things that are going to inform their future life choices and inform their happiness levels in life. I don't think that it's 100% you have to go to a certain school or you have to do the you check all of these very certain boxes. So I don't know, but who knows? I don't know. I mean, they're only 11 and 8, so.
I know. Yeah, I know. Mine's 12. But that is something that I think about, because I didn't really discover and identify and actually acknowledge that I actually did have a love of learning until I started working for NPR, because like our thing in public radio was always like lifelong learners and curiosity. And so it finally clicked for me, because I actually had never heard of public radio. Like I watched PBS when I was little, but we never listened to public radio. And so it didn't exist to me until I was like well into my 20s. And, you know, realizing that that's what it was, that really made my perspective shift. So the way that I parent, I guess, is really by trying to help my son discover what he's into. And I try not to push him too hard in any direction, but to allow him the opportunity to discover it for himself.
Yeah, for sure. People, humans, will discover their own interests and become passionate about them. You know, we don't have, if you want a kid to have a love of music, play music for them and let them get into it, right? I mean, most people got into music because they started listening to it. It connected with them. It helped them feel their feelings and resonated with them. You know, I no shade on the friends of mine that have kids starting early in piano lessons or anything, but kids will discover a love of music if you have it around. If they express an interest in playing an instrument, then yes, I want to let them explore that interest. But you know, I don't think that the way to getting a kid to love music is to insist on so many years of piano lessons necessarily, for instance.
yeah.
Same thing with anything, right? So, you know, I really try to, you know, give the kids the opportunity to explore what they're interested in and then encourage them in whatever direction they go. Because ultimately, as adults, that's what we do. We decide what we're interested in. We decide what we want to spend our time on and what seems, what sparks our curiosity. And having that mindset of a growth mindset and to be a lifelong learner, you know, I think that being aware of that, like you said, in yourself, encourages you to learn new stuff, try new stuff, and explore new opportunities.
Absolutely. And I'm interested in hearing a little bit more about your path as a young adult when you were figuring it out. Or starting to, because like you said, it's like I don't feel we ever really have it figured out. We're just kind of going along with it and it makes sense. It feels right or it doesn't. But tell me a little bit about that path and what you learned along the way when it comes to really giving yourself room to try things and to make mistakes.
Well, I think in hindsight, I probably, looking back, wish I had taken more risks maybe in my career. You know, I'm a little bit risk adverse, and things you, if it feels safe, it's easy to not necessarily just keep doing it, but doing things that feel safe, obviously by definition feels safe. So I had started out, I was in banking straight out of college. And I was a credit analyst in middle market lending, and I discovered pretty quickly that I absolutely hated that. So one thing I did in my career early on that was a risk was I decided about 6 months into that job that there was no way I was going to be able to continue that path for the rest of my life, because it felt very much like you graduate from college and then you get a job and then that's the path you're on until like you retire. And so I at least was able to identify that very early that I was not on the right path. Better to readjust now than let more time go by doing something that, you know, I really wasn't enjoying. And in a, primarily that I was in an environment that I wasn't enjoying. So I got back into rock and roll by landing a job in the accounting office at Jam Productions in Chicago. And this was right after what is now Live Nation had recently bought up most of the local concert promoters around the country that were similar size to Jam Productions. But Jam stayed independent, and it was a fantastic place to work for the time that I was there. And I learned so much from everybody at Jam. But I got my start in the accounting office. So I took from the bank a pay decrease and a significant decrease in level of responsibility and maybe brain power needed to execute the job, because I started doing accounts payable, which is just data entry. So just 10 keying numbers on the number pad on the computer. But I was really good at it. And I was lucky in that somebody a little bit higher up the food chain left. And so I got promoted and got a little bit more responsibility. But during that time, I really knew that I wanted to get out of the accounting office and be on site at events. So one of the things that I did was I got the head production manager at Jam. He was willing to let me shadow him at arena shows in my free time. So we talk a lot in career stuff in our industry about doing like free work or volunteering or whatever. And so this was really the free work that I did that I wouldn't have even asked to get paid for, because what I was getting paid was the knowledge and of how to put on an arena show. So we'd show up at 6 a.m, you know, the production manager for the promoters, like the first one there. So we'd show up at 6 a.m. and I'd shadow him throughout the day. And pretty early on, one of the, I don't know, third or fourth shows, he basically handed me the radio and said, "Here, you got this. I'll see you later." And like took off. And I was like, "Really? You really need in charge? Okay." But I figured it out. And so, you know, it's kind of, I'm willing to get thrown in the deep end on stuff. And so I figured it out, but it taught me how to put on large concerts on the production side. And I understood the numbers on the accounting side from seeing all the show folders come through the accounting office. So it taught me a couple of things. One, that I did not want to be the production manager for a promoter. I didn't want to be a promoter rep. That was not the gig that I wanted. I liked some aspects of it, but it's not the thing I wanted to do for a career, which was great to kind of eliminate that and figure that out before I talked my way into a job doing that. And the other thing was it prepped me for becoming a talent buyer. So when there was a talent buying position open at Jam, I was able to demonstrate that I had the production knowledge and I had the accounting knowledge, so I could jump in right away to budgeting shows and settling shows, and ended up getting that talent buying job and really learned a ton about the business side during that time. But of course, also learned you like some things about a job and don't like some things about a job. And I didn't really like the actual buying of talent. I liked being on site on the shows and handling the finances, but I didn't really like having a crystal ball and figuring out what show to book where and at what ticket price and how many people were going to come. So that's why I left that to become a freelance tour accountant.
That does sound like something that would help you decide kind of lead you on your path, right? Because it's like everything is a stepping stone that helps you get to where you need to go. And you can't really know where to go unless you know what doesn't feel right, because everything that doesn't feel right guides you in the right direction.
Yeah. Now, if you'd asked me in college, what would my ideal job be? I would have described being a tour accountant, but that's not something that you could, that's not a thing you can apply for straight out of college in the late 90s, right? So part of it is, in a career, sometimes you don't even know what that job title is until you get working around it. And then you're like, oh yeah, that thing over there, that's the thing that I want to do. But also, you know, some people don't like touring. They think they're going to, and then they get on a tour bus and discover, like, I don't like sleeping on this moving bus every night. It makes me, you know, seasick, you know, or whatever. I don't have that problem. I love sleeping on a tour bus. But there's, I think that there are lots of jobs that people might think that they want that title, but then, like I said earlier, once they get into it, you know, it might not be the perfect fit that they think that it is. So the more that you can try out stuff earlier in your career, whether it's volunteering or shadowing people or doing some kind of free work, to really refine what it is that you want to do, especially because in the concert industry, lots of people just want to work in the concert industry as though it's like one bucket of, I'll do anything in the concert industry, right? I want to be close to that kind of live event. So it can take people a little while to narrow down, and it's not like, nothing's a linear path. So it's a little bit of a journey to figure out which gig is really kind of like the right fit for you.
Yeah, because I think when we look at, you know, doing free work or internships and, you know, anything like that, a lot of times we kind of miss the whole point of it. And we only look at like where it could get us, mm-hmm. as opposed to just looking at the experience for what it is in order to help you build a sustainable career in the end.
Yeah. One of the things that's really unique about touring is every day feels different and special because you wake up in a different place, right? So really, when you're on the road, it really, each day is a different, separate thing. And like when we're at home, especially during this pandemic, like, I mean, has it been a year? Because it feels like one long day, right?
We're in a time warp.
Right. So time, it's just like days can run together when you don't have that like visual, physical difference from day to day. And so one of the things that's really nice about touring, because of that, it makes you be very present in the moment that I think in other situations, I find myself being maybe less so, because, oh, there's always tomorrow. I could always get to that tomorrow. No, when you're on the road, you're in that venue at that show that day. It's happening right that day. And it makes you more aware of how are things going? What are you learning? Are you accomplishing the things that you want to? Are you checking everything off the list, right? There's, I find that maybe when you're talking about internships or things where people are working towards the next thing, part of it is they're losing that being present in that day and in that moment, that there's something to learn right then. And there's value to that moment. And that's one of the things I like about touring, is it forces us to really kind of live in the moment a little bit more than always be living for the future.
What's the experience like when you realize like, okay, so I've been living every day, you know, as a new day, I'm putting the show together, it's happening now, I move on to the next city, I do it, I come home, I have a couple weeks and I go back. Do you ever feel, or did you ever in your experience feel that maybe you were missing out on a little bit of the planning for the future, especially when it came to, you know, as a woman, maybe deciding like, hey, I want to have kids someday. Did you have a moment where that kind of started to feel real and you had to really start like thinking about it?
Well, yes, probably. I had a unique experience in that I never really toured year round full time. So when I was at GM Productions, I was on the road on a bus for 2 months in the summer, doing shows at minor league baseball parks. And the rest of the year were driving or flying or covering shows locally. So one-offs here or there, I would cover like four or five shows a week a lot of times, but it wasn't like on a tour bus. So that had a little bit more like year-round consistency to it. That was like a full-time year-round job. And then when I left that to be a freelance tour accountant, one of the reasons I did that was I had a hard time turning my brain off at the end of the day. And so I was constantly at work, even if I was not at work, because I just couldn't turn it off, right? My husband, he can go to an office, do his work, come home. And when he's at work, he's at work. And when he's at home, he's at home. And my brain just stays on the current project.
It's like being a teacher. You're like having teaching dreams, like,
yeah,
and you're not at school.
Right. So I found that I actually wasn't very present in my home life because I was always still thinking about work. So one of the things that was nice about touring was I go be on tour and focus on that for 24 hours a day because there's no way to not focus on it around the clock. And then I could come home and be more present at home and, you know, spend the time and energy on life things that I wanted to. And I was fortunate that my husband has a nice stable career. And so we were able to make, you know, choices based on, you know, that I didn't have to tour year round necessarily. And when I did get into touring, it was about the time that I was wanting to start a family. So one of my unique work-life balances, I was the tour accountant for the Warped Tour for 9 years. And I don't think I would have taken the job if this had happened in a different order. But I was not pregnant, but trying to get pregnant, got offered the job, figured I didn't want to tour if I was pregnant or with kids. I assumed that I knew what I would want in the future situation. So I took the job and then a week later found out I was in fact pregnant and the baby was going to be due 3.5 weeks before after Warped Tour was over. So my husband was fine with it. My doctor was fine with it and nobody else gets an opinion. So I went on that tour and was uber pregnant, my first Warped Tour. And then because of kind of that rhythm of life, I toured in the summers for 2 months. And then for a couple of years, I was a stay-at-home mom for 10 months out of the year. So I was able to, and part of that is because I was doing that in my early 30s, I had a well-established career. I was able, you know, it would have been different if I was in my, you know, earlier 20s, that I was able to have that flexibility on not having to tour year-round and have the work-life balance that, you know, is a little bit different than moms that go to a job in the morning and come home in the evening. It was more of an annual cycle than a daily cycle on that. But it was definitely a consideration. And I think that figuring out when to have kids and what was my career structure going to look like at that time, it was very unknown. And, you know, I say I'm not a risk taker, but clearly I am a little bit. Like, I dove into, we're going to try touring with the kid at home. And fortunately, it worked out. So.
Well, and you clearly had buy-in from the people that mattered, right?
Yes.
So you were able to work on it together.
Yes. Yeah. I'm very fortunate that I have a supportive partner and we are, you know, on a journey in life together. Yeah.
Yeah. It's not often that I've had conversations like this where, you know, you see that, like, there's, you know, you have a family and you're able to still kind of have the best of both worlds. And I did have a conversation with a friend, Sarge, who was on the show a few episodes ago. And he had a very opposite experience because he actually, and he was the dad and he wasn't home. And so he was just gone. And he said, like, he felt like he missed out on so much of his kid's life. And they actually ended up having a conversation after the fact, like, because his kids are older now, and it was really painful for both of them. And, you know, so it's like you kind of hear a lot of these things, and I feel like sometimes when you are kind of in it alone, where you have your career and, you know, and they weren't together, the parents weren't, so that's kind of like another situation, right? Mm-hmm. It's a little bit, there's a little bit more of like a give and take when it comes to that. But if you're fortunate enough to, you know, to have a partner and to be able to plan ahead with your career as you're doing it, there definitely is like a really nice benefit that can come from that. But was there anything that you really did have to work through that you would say was difficult?
Family-wise, the summer of 2017 was, well, I'd always said I would keep touring with the Warped Tour or whatever as long as it worked for my family. And that summer, it just stopped working for my family. It was just like all of the stars of not great aligned and got through that summer, but had to put in my resignation and not go out on the road the next summer. It just, the kids were getting older. They had a really hard time with me being gone. Various health things that everybody's fine, but now diagnosed that. So it was, there was just some challenges that, and currently I'm a roadie. I would like to be out on the road at the moment. We're stuck at home. But I don't know if that would be the best thing for my kids and my family. And so getting creative when I do want to work, but I don't want to be on the road year round, what it did become a challenge. So it gave me kind of a push into some entrepreneurial directions and into teaching and doing some other stuff. And that's where I kind of say, like, I still don't really know what I want to be when I grow up, because I'm doing a variety of things. And part of that is because I don't really like to be locked into just one thing all of the time. I like to have new, interesting projects to work on. But the number one project is always my kids. So if something's not working out with them, they're going to come first before career things. So yes, I mean, having kids can certainly like throw a wrench into career plans for sure.
It definitely speaks to the importance of boundaries.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Tell me about how you developed boundaries, and did you always know that they were important?
Well, that's nice of you to think that I have boundaries.
I mean, clearly, because you decided you weren't going to tour anymore. And that's a very specific and boundary that you stuck to, which couldn't have been easy.
Yeah. Well, and I definitely, but I never say never. You never know what you're going to think about something in the future. We think we are really good at knowing what our future selves are going to like or feel or want in a particular situation. And there has been, like, I'm sure you know, research done on this, that we are terrible at that. We don't know what we're going to like in the future. We think we do, but we're wrong. We are better off, the studies have shown, listening to somebody else who has been in a similar situation. They're going to know what's better for us than we know, because they've been through it and have an idea. And this is, it feels like a funny concept, but I knew that I had to stop touring then, but I'm not going to be done touring forever. I 100% anticipate I will be on a tour bus at some point in the future, or working, you know, I like working festivals as well. So working festivals, which don't necessarily have a tour bus involved. But you know, I love traveling. And that was one thing that when I stopped touring as much, I built more family travel into our lives, and we got an RV and find relatively inexpensive ways to spend our free time adventuring. And I think that that's, you know, I love sharing my love of travel and adventure with the kids.
I think it's just important to understand like what's important to you. Like what are you going to prioritize above all? And if you're aware that it's important for you to prioritize your family, that's what you're going to do. And every decision that you make is based on that soul value.
Yeah. And, you know, the time that I can spend and that people spend not working that refreshes them, you really do grow a lot and think a lot about new things and new ways to approach things and what you want to do better, you know, next time. Or, you know, that downtime is really important for people to be able to come back to whatever they're doing stronger and more refreshed. And, I am a big believer in not letting myself get too burnt out on something, or because I have the tendency to like hyper-focus on things and then like get into that flow state and then too many hours have passed. And I almost have to set myself timers if I'm working on a project to like stop working on it, or else I can go on for too long, right? But that's not productive. That's not useful. What's more useful is stopping at a reasonable time and then giving your brain time to recharge and refresh before you go back to it. And I think that, you know, the same thing with touring, people need to take breaks, not necessarily long breaks like I have, or in the pandemic. But, you know, if I've seen plenty of roadies that go from tour to tour to tour, and like they get burnt out without realizing it. And I think that when you're deep in it, it's hard to see how burnt out you might be feeling about something.
Yeah, until it gets really bad and then your body just breaks down and forces you out.
Mm-hmm.
It speaks a lot to that, the importance of the even just the couple week break that you may get in between, or even if it's just like a week or two, really realizing that that is a time for you to reset. What are some of the ways that you reset when it's time?
I'm sorry, I have to think about that for a second. Well, because like I'm so in this pandemic life at the moment, which is it's just such a weird time. I got two kids remote schooling. I never feel like I'm really ever off, because as long as they are in the house, my ears are tuned for like, is there something that going on that I need to know about? Right. So actually that's something that recently I've been trying to figure out, how can I better take a break and recharge when I literally cannot get away from the thing I need to take a break from. But I think that nature is important. You know, it's not like I'm a big like hiker or backpacker or anything, but like being outside in nice weather. And I think that that can change people's moods so significantly. You know, on the Warped Tour, we would have such a wide variety of places that we were playing, and the accommodations for the production office varied quite a bit. The best day was always at the Gorge outside Seattle, because it's just gorgeous. And the office had windows, and especially when they redid like the backstage area. And it was just beautiful. And everybody would walk into my office and like, it would take their breath away. They would, this is gorgeous. And everybody was in a good mood that day. Everybody. It was like, you could not be in a bad mood. And I think that kind of highlighted that our environment has a significant effect on how we feel. So actually, one of the things I really like doing that to relax and recharge that I can do at home, I like organizing stuff. I like everything to have a place. I like things to be in their place. I'm not OCD, and I would not use that as like an example, because it's obviously that's a real condition. But like, I like to figure out that puzzle and then have a serene environment as a result. So actually I spent the morning organizing my desk, because it was something that needed to be done for several years, and I can do it while children are talking at me. And I do find that it like creates a more serene environment.
Yeah, tidying up your space, really.
Yeah.
You're totally right. Do you think there's something to it also that you're kind of seeing a bunch of little things that you can get done in like under 2 minutes, that like if you just got them off your to-do list, like yeah. You just get that little like yeah. breath.
Yeah. I also like procrastinating by doing other things on my to-do list like that. Like I don't probably, and that's why like my desk, I just shove stuff in it for a while. And like, but every time I open the drawer, I was like, ugh, that's just a pile of junk that I have shoved in there. And like now I open the drawer, I'm like, things are how they are supposed to be. And you know, one of the things I like about being on tour is you get a limited amount of stuff with you. Like I'm not a minimalist by any stretch. Like I live in like a normal like size house and like have far too much stuff, I'm sure. So I mean, I like things, but like I also like to really only have the things that I need. And that one of the things that I enjoy about being on tour is the minimalism of, I've got just the clothes that I need, just the toiletries, just the supplies, just the office supplies. And I like to have, you know, everything's kind of arranged just so. And there's a freedom and a serenity in that gives my brain space to focus on the other stuff. You know, when there's clutter in my environment, it really does seep into, you know, it's a thing on the to-do list, whether it's written down or not. And it's nice to, it feels very freeing. And then it allows me the mental space to focus on the things that I do need to focus on.
I did hear somewhere that your space is a reflection of what's going on in your mind.
Yeah, I think that that's true. Whether you intend for it to be or not, right? Some people are very intentional about their spaces, and others, it's just, it is what it is, right? And I think that there is a reflection on that. I noticed that, you know, I have one of my children is not that into having his space organized, but he loves it when it is. He doesn't want to do it himself. But I think that that's because, you know, that's an executive functioning skill, and that's it's a little challenging for him. But he loves walking into like a clean hotel room where everything is just like feels how it should be. He really loves the feeling of those spaces. And I'm just baffled that I'm like, why don't you want to make your space more like that?
He's like, well, you know, I could hire somebody to do it.
No. Right.
No, it's funny because, you know, it really does. It reminds me of what, like when I was little, like I just remember my mom constantly nagging me to like clean my room. And like with my son, he does this weird thing where like he doesn't really spend time in his room. And
mine neither.
Yeah. And so his room is actually usually pretty like neat. And now with the internet, it's like he doesn't really have that many toys anymore. Like he doesn't ask for new stuff because he just wants everything digital.
Mm-hmm.
So it's actually not that big of a deal. But I remember being little and I would like put stuff under my bed. Like I would hide stuff and my mom would get so mad at me. But like now, if I do that sort of thing, I do notice that it affects my mental state and I actually have to put in the work, but I do find it soothing to kind of just like get it done. But I just think kids, I don't know. It's just like you said, like it's just not something that they're like really capable of doing just yet.
Well, and you know, cleaning and organizing are two different skills, right? So organizing and figuring out where something goes, and cleaning is then putting the thing in that place. So my other child, not a huge fan of cleaning because no kid really is, but he loves organizing. And so he'll be like, oh, mom, can we like hang out in my room and like figure out how to organize it better? I'll be like, oh, you're my organizing child.
Oh, that is so sweet. Yeah. But granted, so my son has a desk downstairs and he has like a drawer where like he keeps like all of his artwork that like he doesn't want anybody to like touch, and it's locked. And I'm like, okay, what else are you hiding in there? But I know where the key is, so it's fine. But you know, sometimes it's a complete mess. And then like, but he will make sure that, cause he takes piano lessons downstairs and they're virtual, and he'll like make sure that his space is like really neat because he does not like he's embarrassed if it's not. And mm-hmm. So he'll make sure that he takes care of it. But he's kind of definitely more of like the order disorder sort of thing where it's like in a specific pile. It's like organized, but like only he understands how it's organized. Right. So you better not touch it.
That's funny.
I definitely heard him like shout when like his grandma will like throw away like a pile of like paper, like drawings that he had. He's like, no. She's like, I mean, it's just like they were just like sitting on a random table. What do you want me to do?
Yeah, it's yes. Mm-hmm. I will be like, if this isn't cleaned up, I'm just putting this all in a bag, and then you're gonna have to like figure it out later, right? And because I really try not to like throw away their stuff. That I mean, I sneak some pieces of paper that have one tiny scribble on them. I sneak those into the recycling, but it is challenging to find that balance between like, I know how you would be happier, and so I want to just do it for you. Like that's not teaching self-sufficiency and executive functioning organization skills. You know, so I do find that I have to check myself and be like, these are his things. And he wants to hold on to them. That's fine. We will find a system for that. But yeah.
Yeah. It's like having respect for another human being mm-hmm. to allow them to have agency and to make decisions for themselves, which is difficult as a mother.
It is. It is. Yeah.
So how, you know, so I'm wondering, like, how does it affect the way that you deal with people in your career, have like being a mom? Because I know it definitely changes the way you approach relationships.
I think it made me more understanding of other people. When my oldest child was maybe two, I read a book called Raising Your Spirited Child. And it was really an enlightening book for interacting with the other adults in my life. The concept behind it was there's like nine like personality traits that you fall on some spectrum. There's not a good or a bad, there's just a spectrum of, right? Like, so the one we're all most familiar with is introvert and extrovert, and everybody is somewhere on that spectrum. And there's a handful of other things that I hadn't really thought about as being things, like people that are quick to adapt or slow to adapt, both from like in the minute, if the oven is beeping, I will get up. It doesn't matter what I'm doing. I hear that beep, I'm up and turning it off. My husband will finish reading the entire page that he is reading while the oven continues to beep. And it just like, but he takes longer on transitions than I do, right? So that's an example of something that would drive me bonkers until I understood that that's just like different. People are different about that particular thing, right? And there was a whole handful of those that really were kind of enlightening to like, oh, these are not like, he's not just being pokey. Like it's almost like his sense of time is different than my sense of time, right? So when we have kids, if we are different than our children on some of those characteristics, we have to figure out how to effectively interact with somebody whose natural tendencies are different than ours, that aren't, there's not a right or a wrong, they're just different. And, you know, with young children, that can be infuriating sometimes, because why can't they just do it the way I do it? At the speed that I do it in, the first time I ask them to do it, right? Or whatever it is.
It just reminded me of me trying to show my son like how to hold a shovel. Like I'm literally showing you how to do it. Why can't you, like, why aren't you doing right. it? But my boyfriend, you know, shows me, he's like, you just didn't explain it right.
Right. So different people respond to, and then learning that some people are audio listener, and that's not the right word. Some people are visual learners and some people are audio learners and some people are tactile. Like just the fact that like we cement information into our brains in different ways. Like this is not something that comes up until you have children that do things differently than you. And you have to figure out how to overcome that. So I think that as a result of that, it certainly made me more understanding and of lots of other adults in my life and coworkers and people that I'm interacting with. And I think it really probably changed the way I approach interacting with people. I was to be a little bit more understanding and thinking about how are they interpreting or perceiving this? What do they need for me to know what they need to know or get the information or learn this step in the process, or, you know, and some of that is how to be persuasive to a wide variety of people. So I think that parenting changed that in my career a little bit.
Yeah. There's something to understanding that it's not one-sided. And I remember being very like hard-headed and stubborn about things for a really long time and not starting to kind of back off on, you know, my perception and my expectation of the way that other people should act. That didn't start changing. And I didn't start to realize that like, oh, like I have zero control over them. All I can do is change the way that I communicate and make it so that I give them enough space to, you know, to try to react in a way that I can understand them, and then just mm-hmm. explain how, you know, what I'm trying to do, like actually try to explain it instead of, you know, that whole thing, like just, we always like expect people to know what we're thinking and know exactly what we mm-hmm. want. And like, that's, you realize very quickly as a mom, that's not reality.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, a lot of times in careers, and I think in the concert industry specifically, there's this expectation that you should have been like born with all of the knowledge that you need to do whatever the job is, right? But everybody's learning and growing and has had different experiences and different backgrounds and different levels of education or depths of education or formalities of it. I think that being understanding that we don't know where somebody has come from and kind of giving everyone some grace to stumble a little bit and learn from experiences, you know, I think that that is an important thing to do that maybe sometimes in our industry doesn't happen as much as it could.
There's a fine line, right? Because sometimes people think that when we talk about being kind and giving people grace, like we think, you know, it's like you're being easy on them, but that's not necessarily it. It's like, I think it's like being open to sharing your experiences and understanding that there is a learning curve to things and helping just through communicating that and having that little bit of giving yourself that little bit of a moment to take a step back.
And giving some guidance and feedback rather than biting somebody's head off for not knowing. Yeah. I mean, that's really the big difference there, right? Yeah. And, you know, and that's something that I think that has been a good thing. Our internet has broadened our world, right? Travel used to be the way to do that most effectively, where you see that, like, not everybody had the same life experiences and life path as you. You see that a lot when you travel, right? And the internet, I think, is bringing that into our, I would say homes, but into our screen, whatever is in front of our face, our screens. And I hope that that is something that as a world, we become more understanding of others, that not everybody was born with the same information or had the same opportunities to have, you know, stumble and fail and try again. So I think that, yeah, the term giving people grace is let's work through this the first time. And I mean, if you're making the same mistake over and over and over, that's a different situation, but let's assume that people are trying their best. And let's assume that if they're not doing it the way that you would do it, it's because they haven't been exposed to that or haven't had to think through it that way. Or, you know, so, you know, adding some guidance rather than intensity and why are you doing it that way, right? I think is important.
Yeah, that's definitely something that, I mean, I experienced it when I was like a brand new teacher. I mean, there was a lot of criticizing and not a whole lot of like helping and guiding. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when you're new to anything, you do like, it's like, you're almost trying to prove that you know what you're doing. Mm-hmm. And it just comes with trying new things, because I mean, that's the only way that you're going to like be able to get through it, because it is difficult. And something that always worked for me, or that always works for me, is when someone explains to me how they got to that point where they decided that is the best way to do it. And then you kind of are able to understand, as somebody who's receiving that guidance, that their experience led them to that decision, and they're actually saving you a lot of trouble by sharing that with you. So that's something that I love from everyone, especially in the industry now, that has been so open to sharing their experience and has been so open to mentoring and having conversations and letting people into the conversation, or even just to listen to that conversation. I think that's really amazing. And what is something that you would like to see moving forward in the industry to help so that the culture continues to get better and better?
I mean, I think that big change comes in small pieces. And I think the more people that are becoming more veteran in their careers, that can see themselves as such and can be a mentor and be helpful to those around them, I think that that goes a long way, and that builds upon itself over time. You know, I had a friend once who was a tour manager, and I was starting to teach people about how to like settle shows. And I remember him saying, like, I don't want to teach anybody how to do that because then they're going to take my job. And I was like, dude, if you think you're competing for the same job as someone that you're teaching, like, you've got it all wrong. If you're teaching them, you are not competing. You're not going to be competing for the same jobs, right? You're going to be a slight step above that, at least. So, you know, really people that can think about their knowledge as if they're sharing it, it's going to help the entire industry rise. All, you know, rising tides raise all ships. And if they, rather than seeing it as creating competition for themselves, I think that that's a key perspective shift, that the more people that can have that, I think that's going to be beneficial to the industry. So that's just what an individual person kind of can do. Obviously, our industry needs all kinds of help in lots of different directions during this time. You know, one of the things that I've spent my time during the pandemic doing is working with Jim Digby, founding an organization called Showmakers, where we are trying to support and uplift the live events community through education, mentoring, resources on our website, participating in conferences, and really bringing together not only experts in the field of what they're talking about, but especially a diverse representation of people that maybe, you know, whenever I'm involved in putting together a crew for a tour or putting together a number of panels or sessions for a conference, it is important to me that everybody can look up on the stage and see themselves in one way, shape, or form or another. Because I think that's really important. So those are the things that I'm trying to do to help better our industry. I hope that's contributing in a positive way to people's lives, but it seems like it has been. And you know, I teach at Columbia College Chicago. I think it's really important that because I have the opportunity, for me, it makes me happy to do it, to really get into the nuts and bolts of educating the next round of tour managers and tour accountants and agents and talent buyers on how the business functions.
I love that. Well, thank you so much, Jen. I love everything that you guys are doing. And thank you for sharing your story. Thank you for sharing your knowledge. And, you know, Tour Life Podcast is your friend. So if you ever want to come back and share anything else, this is your home.
Well, thank you so much for having me. It's really been fun to chit chat about stuff, and glad we got to talk about family and kids and work-life balance and all that stuff. So I really appreciate the podcast that you put together, and I really appreciate you bringing me on it. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Here are some key takeaways from my conversation with Jen Kellogg. 1. When exploring career paths, be sure to consider your everyday tasks. You have to enjoy the way you're spending your time more than your title. Instead of asking yourself what you want to be when you grow up, ask yourself what kind of person you want to be when you grow up, and what are the qualities that you want to develop. 2. Take time to understand your values and priorities. This will shape your boundaries and your ability to enforce them in order to find true work-life balance. 3. Our environment has a significant effect on how we feel. Be sure to keep your space organized and calm, and get out in nature. And when you're able, bring nature into your own space. 4. It's important to allow others to stumble and to learn from their own experiences, whether it's someone on your team or your own child. And 5, when tasked with being the leader, be sure to give guidance and feedback, and to not just bite people's heads off for not knowing. Thank you so much for joining us on the Tour Life podcast. Be sure to give Jen a follow on Instagram at jkellogg11, as well as Showmakers at We Are Showmakers. And don't forget to like, subscribe, leave a review on iTunes, and to follow The Tour Life on Instagram at The Tour Life Podcast.